Welcome, everybody, to The Stand-Up, where we talk about the most important issues of our day. And today, we actually have two very special topics. The first topic today is going to be on lines of code. Does your count really matter? Does size matter or does it not? And number two, we have Casey Muratore giving us a full-on presentation and or just walkthrough, talkthrough about the Notepad++ situation when it comes to what's it called, all the vulnerabilities and all that. And I think you might even throw in a little bit of Notepad RCE potentially at the same time. Don't
it's
know if you're gonna
notepads,
do that one.
Both notepads.
Yeah, both pads. Both pads.
Not just the plus plus.
Yeah.
Right.
Notepad multiplied by one plus plus plus. Anyways, sorry.
I don't think we're probably going to have a lot of disagreement. Sorry for the people out there who are expecting us to really get angry at each other about this one. This is more that it's kind of like sometimes you go to the studio to get a little bit off your chest, sometimes called the stew by those in the professional biz. You know, you just got to say what you feel and feel what you say and get it out there. This is just one of those where I felt like we just got to say it. And I don't understand why everyone lost their mind for this. Like a year ago, or maybe even like 2 minutes ago, everyone agreed, hey guys, it's a terrible metric to determine developer productivity, to just say how many lines of code someone wrote in the last 6 months or in the last day. But now all I ever see, Mr. Gary Tan himself, GT for short, for those who know him in SF.
Hey,
at
the don't
YCBs.
Forget the Y16Zs.
Yep, the Y16Zs. That stands for Y Combinator, boys, with a Z because they're cool. SF stands for San Francisco. Josh, play the song. He said he was writing so many lines of code and being so productive that he burned out his USB-C adapters. Right?
Wait,
is that
what?
Not? Is that not? Brian, can you find the tweet? I know you've got the tweet bookmarked.
Please
tell
me this
was not said.
I don't have the tweet booked, but I will find it and I'll display it. Give me a second.
That was not that. Please, someone tell me that was not a thing that was said in the real world, even by someone at Y Combinator, which I realize is a very low bar.
No, the president of Y, the Y16Zs.
You're in trouble now, buddy. You're getting blocked on Twitter on that one.
Yeah,
oh, go right ahead. Like
Casey,
that saves
you
me
not
the
try
trouble.
To find some funding in the next 3 months when it comes to an AI startup, or you're screwed, buddy. Never work in this town again.
I'm never working in this town again.
Sorry, but when I need to go, when I finally have my growth hacking strategy for my new to-do list app, I won't know where to go to get the funding.
Oh, I didn't realize, though, Trash, I'm really sorry. Receipts is going to have a hard time getting
funding.
Oh, I was
going to
bring
it.
I was
going to
bring that
book.
Up. Dude, it's getting funding. I'm getting funding. I swear.
I guess
I'm going to try.
It's going to be called IOUs from here on out.
I'm going to try to get funding. It's going to be amazing.
I'm sorry. What I meant is Y Combinator is amazing. My favorite place. All the best people work there. That's what I meant to say.
True. Hey, is that HTTP? Get that out of here. That's not how we order coffee. We order coffee via SSH, terminal.shop. Yeah, you want a real experience? You want real coffee? You want awesome subscriptions so you never have to remember again? Oh, you want exclusive blends with exclusive coffee and exclusive content? Then check out Kron. You don't know what SSH is? Well, maybe the coffee is not for you.
Terminal coffee.
I actually do want to jump in on this one because I think what ends up happening, and I just call me crazy here, is that average person, thank you, TJ. I love that you made that joke. Everybody,
I'm listening.
Everybody
paid
loves that joke.
I'm sorry, we're not moving on. Someone needs to tell me if somebody actually said that they burned out their USB. What are you talking about?
Hold on, Grok.
Where?
Is trying to find the tweet.
I don't know
how true that part is, but I do have a story about lines of code.
Yes. Okay. Just let me finish my lines of coding.
Yep. Okay.
Oh, by the way, yes, I found the tweet. Okay, I think I have it. Here it goes.
Okay.
Here we go. I'll just expose the tweet. All right. It says right here. It says this: is it possible I used Claude code so much somehow my USB connectors burned out of my MacBook Pro? Two of mine are dead and won't charge, and now the third maxes out at 15 watts. Now I'm afraid my code Tamagotchi is about to die.
So basically,
I'm going to keep this tweet forever now. I'm going to put it on my super special meme site.
I guess I don't want to say anything too specific here because, I don't work with MacBooks, but what is he imagining would have occurred? Like, what
there's
would
a lot
even
of
be
tokens.
Using those connectors more because you were using Claude code? Is it just because when he says burned out, but did he use those to plug into the network and he thinks that the network packets were going so fast to Claude code or something?
I think
like,
I know.
What is the thing?
Can I explain it?
Please,
because I'm confused.
I'm very confused right now.
Is that Claude code, especially during that day, which by the way was just weeks ago, used to use something like terabytes of memory is what it would say on there, and it was just always pegging out everything. And so my assumption is that he was running such a heavy program and constantly having a CPU at like 100% and having it charging that somehow the nonstop charging, nonstop running of a computer caused the charging ports to not work. That's like, honestly, that's my guess. I'm trying to read into it.
But correct me if I'm wrong here again, because this is not my area of expertise at all.
True.
But I thought Max had a MagSafe power connector and didn't charge over the USB-C.
They do actually, no. In fact, they do have the USB-C charger and the MagSafe charger.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also, remember, there was an in-between generation where they're just like, we're only going to use USB-C. And that's when they hated everybody and they thought their Mac super cool. And so there was a while that it was just like three of them. I think that's it. And that's all
you
got.
So basically what Gary Tan is saying here, so to be maximally charitable.
Yes.
Charitable would be he's memeing on us. That would be the, which is possible.
Okay.
Yes.
That would be maximally charitable.
Sorry. The maximally charitable technical interpretation would be that it went something like this. Gary Tan is Claude coding so hard for some reason. Because I don't know what he makes, but he's doing something. And he plugs in the power to one of the USB-C ports on the Mac, and that is apparently able to supply power. I don't know anything about how the Mac is wired electrically. I've never even seen a MacBook Pro other than the one I think that Anna had. Claude code sucks down so much power for such a sustained period of time that it burns out that USB-C port. But Gary's like, that's not a problem because this thing has more than one USB-C port. Unplugs it, right? He unplugs the cable from that port, and he plugs it into the other USB-C port, which now I'm supposed to believe that all of these USB-C ports are all wired to the charging, which doesn't sound like how a laptop is normally wired, but I'm just going to go with
it. That is how Macs work, Casey. You can plug it into any of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so this is like just because hardcore Apple engineering, he plugs it into the other one. He's like, awesome. Now I can get back to making this to-do list app that I was working on.
It was actually called Gary's Lists. All right, that's actually what he was making. It's a little bit different. Ironically, it was called Gary List.
What he was making.
Okay, so he was making Gary List, and he was like, I just need Claude code to just please finish this Gary List app. Just suck down enough power to finish this Gary List app so I can finish recording the fact that my wife left the fucking dishes in the sink, or whatever it is. So he has it in there, and he does it again, and it burns out again. And now he's like, there's only one explanation for this. Claude fried my ports. That's what we think happened.
Yeah, that was my interpretation of it, was that he was running his computer nonstop, which I also run mine nonstop. Like, I never turn off my computer, and it's just always plugged into one. So somehow it just
Brian,
was juicing.
All right.
To be fair,
I mean, maybe.
I want to say this. You don't have the token flow going over those ports like he does.
Dude, and can a white boy catch the flow? Like, that's
they cannot, unfortunately.
Okay.
Because the tokens flowing is even more powerful than electricity. Mm. Think about that. So I think it's just an unprecedented amount of power through the USB-C. It was not rated for this level of intelligence.
That's true. When you buy power cords, you have to now check the intelligence level, because that's how you know if you can handle that level of intelligence.
It can only handle up to GPT-4.0. After that, this bad boy burns out.
What's the X.com account? So I want to check, because you're saying I get blocked. I want to know if I'm already blocked. I bet I'm just already blocked.
It's Gary with two R's.
Here, no, I'll just give the exact one here. Here, hold on.
No, he wants to know if he's blocked.
I know. I'm just going to give him like the exact tweet and everything, and he
can
tell right away.
GT follows me. What's up, GT? If you're watching.
Oh, actually? Wow. Yeah.
Really? GT follows you?
I'm a nice person on X.com, the everything application. If you're not in the
not
McDonald's
after this podcast,
CEO,
he's blocking all of us after
job.
This one.
I am nice to everybody on X.com. I say like almost nothing mean.
That's not true.
Well, guys, I'm posting this. I'm posting this into the studio chat.
I can't tell you. That's why if I had an app, I would have logged it and I would have told you. See?
Great point.
Exactly. Case in point.
My last thing that I said that was mean is I said Claude Opus is trash, but I did this photo, which is actually making fun of people who are perennially thinking that every single like new model makes all the other models trash. And like, this is what I imagine the person looks like. It's just constantly like, oh, a new one came out. Actually, everything else was trash before this. And that's kind of like, I was actually, that was a meta joke.
Casey, I didn't see where
hey,
I didn't
Prime,
get a
check your tweet, check your x.com. I added you on something.
Yeah, turns out. Poor fella. How did he get blocked?
I was already blocked.
No,
I had nothing to lose. He already blocked me at some point in the past for something.
GT and the Y16Zs.
Thank you.
They don't like it, Casey.
No worries.
I don't even see that tweet.
Nothing on the line.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get back a little bit to the thing. Let me tell you why I think Lines of Code is happening. So my big grand theory, my unified theory of the universe is this, is that the average developer, I mean, I've been around a lot of developers. When they're programming, they look at code for an exceptionally long period of time and then make some changes, and they don't have that editor flow. They don't have a lot of hotkeys memorized. It's actually it's why I hate pair programming. It just makes me want to cry. And so when I watch all these things happen, it's just like, holy cow. And now they've been given a canon in which can make changes in rates in which they've never had. And so now Lines of Code went from, oh, that's not a meaningful metric, to look how meaningful it is, because now their life has completely changed. And this does represent at least a good portion of developers, even if we assume that everyone beyond 5 years of experience is an expert programmer that is maximally efficient. The majority of people are going to still be pretty slow. Not that, because they have 5 or less years of experience, especially after like the great wave of incoming people. So I think that we just have a huge amount of people that have come into the industry in the last couple of years, and now like magic has happened on their rate of production. And so it's just
I hadn't considered this angle of it was something we used to measure before, and most people couldn't get a big number, just like either from physical skill issues or for good ideas, or like they just don't have enough code in their code base or whatever. And so everyone's like, well, we don't want to measure that, because I can't even get a big number, even if we could.
That's right.
But now they can get big number. And I forgot big number good, up and to the right, good. As Casey always said when we got on the call, but up and to the right, it's good. So, okay, now it all is becoming very clear to me.
That's a great point.
I do think there's like a lot of that kind of thing going on, because basically like what the AI – sort of what the AI era has taught me is that literally everything anybody ever said about programming that was critical of something that I previously was trying to argue for, none of those arguments they actually believed. Those were all just things they said because that's how they were writing code. And the instant that they changed to writing code a different way, all those arguments go out the window. Whether it was lines of code or the code should be readable or any of those, they're just like, nope, because now I use this other tool. And so now I'm not going to, all those things that I was arguing before about why I couldn't do this good thing you were suggesting that I do, suddenly those arguments don't matter anymore, right? And so I think like that's been the most annoying part of that whole process, was like, none of it was actually true. They don't actually believe any of it. They were just ways of justifying an existing development practice that they didn't want to have to reconsider. And the instant you give them a tool that makes it easier for them to do something else than the current easiest thing they were doing, then they'll do that thing and start arguing that that's the good way to do things. No analysis necessary, right? Like they will not actually go undertake some project to determine that it's actually better in some way. They'll just start arguing for the new thing, right? It's very disappointing. And this has nothing to do with AI being good or bad. There's literally nothing to do with the AI. AI is not relevant here at all, other than it's just the new thing, like object-oriented programming was. AI can be good or bad, and all the things I just said are happening regardless, right? So,
True. I am fully convinced that if you could build a basic routing system that really works well with the AI and is fully documented, and it takes no React and everything goes back to, like, say, web components, you know, which everybody says web components are the worst thing in the universe. But if you could just go back to that and you're like, oh, yeah, reduce your bundle size by 60% and all these things happen and everything just works, people would be like, yeah, everyone hates React. React is actually the worst way to develop. Would just instantaneously turn web components
Prime,
are actually really good.
We actually already had this because React is every new major version has completely redone React. So we've actually done this already. They're like class components. No, that's lame. We're all about hooks now. Nope, we're not about hooks. Or I don't remember what the order is. So we actually
useEffect is the best. UseEffect is the hook.
That situation play out. Like, we already did that, and everyone did. Yep, we hate that. We hate classes.
I have a quick related story about, like output. But this is pre-AI. This is, like, 20... I mean, not pre-AI, but pre-AI.
Gosh, we can't even...
But we understand it.
How long
ago exactly. This is, like, 2019. So we used to have this...
started in 2021. Okay.
Okay. My bad. This is pre-AI. So we had this app that we used that actually, like, tracked your, like, commit rates, your lines of code. We didn't actually use it to, like, extract any meaningful data or decisions. But I gave access to it to my, I let my engineers, because I was leading a team at the time. I was like, dude, check out this, like, app. It shows, like, where we all fall on this graph. And obviously, if you're up to the right, you're doing better. And everyone saw that they were, like, kind of in the middle. But I tell you what, after they saw that graph, I have never seen an engineering team work so hard to get to the top right. And it was actually, like, the best thing that ever happened. They're like, where am I at now, coach? Where am I at now? Am I on the top right? And every week they'd go look and be like, yeah, I'm at the top. And they would just, like, code so hard. Like, everyone was locked in. They used to all just sit around and talk, but everyone's had their headphones on, clicky-clacky. Man,
that
was
so cool.
It was insane. I was just like, oh my God, they really want, like, they just gamified it. Like, not even on purpose. And they were just, man, it was insane. Anyways, I don't want to share that.
Wait, so Treasure, are you arguing lines of code is a good metric now?
I think pre-AI, if you just, like, if you don't actually use it for, like, making actual decisions and you just look at it just for funsies. But if that happens as a result, I think that's pretty cool. Like, just, like, fun competition, I guess.
It was
insane to see.
Yeah. I do feel like there is the difficult thing for the lines of code discussion before, though, was like, okay, if you shipped zero lines of code, we do know you didn't do anything, though. Like,
there is a metric, like, there's time and lines of change. And it's just like, oh, you didn't do anything. We know you're not doing something. Oh, you only deleted 1,000, but did nothing else. You're a genius. Right? Like, there's like this weird kind of weird hills that exist for people like genius.
Or you just write docs full time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Your negative lines of code is definitely a metric. Like, how many lines of code did this person do this year? It's like -360,000. You're like, okay, that person is a freaking, like,
double the salary.
Yeah,
double
like that. That dude's bank, like
that's a principal engineer.
Right? Yeah,
yeah. It is nice. The other thing
that's
that
no longer
I find,
true now.
Well, I don't know. This what's crazy is like I mean I've been vibe coding a lot. I've been vibe coding a lot lately. And, but I don't really like calling it vibe coding because I actually read the code and also open my editor and like write things and then like tell it that it was wrong and stuff. It is insane to me how many times if it happens to get unlucky in the search of the repo, it will just start rewriting a thing that we have that already like 80%, these are not big repos yet, by the way, either. This is like... Just tiny, tiny repos, not like anything that I would say like a real company has after 2 years or something, right? They're like tiny. And I'm like, this is nightmare scenario stuff for like if you were trying to maintain something and you were like fixing some path and you thought you handled it because you fixed the function with exactly the same name, but then it turns out 37 other spots randomly in the code base that inlined that same function at the top of the TypeScript file. Like, oh.
And they all have some variant of the set of fixes.
Yeah, they're not deterministic.
It's,
yeah, so then they
just
don't
like,
match.
Okay, well,
either.
That one has 14 of the 22 fixes we've needed to apply. This one has 12. Casey, you saw this, though. I actually am curious. We should redo this again, Casey, where I let Twitch chat build a game, and then Casey and I walked through the code together to kind of be like, what did vibe coding produce? Like, how was it? Yeah. And it was a.
It would be fun to retry.
But it would be fun to retry because now everything has gotten significantly. Like, we could all agree that the models have gotten better. It's foolish for people not to say those things. So I'd be curious, what is the practical implication of vibe coding now versus a year and a half ago? Like, is it actually dramatically better in practice, or is it partially better?
Let's have a write
it
in C.
It might be interesting
for
you to try it, too, because you never really got it to produce, like, a working... Like, it didn't really work, either.
Chussy 3 was actually a really good game, and I would like you to take that back.
Bleep that out.
you were asking it to kind of make like a Ray Marcher, and it never really quite was able to pull that off. And so
the anime waifus were
incredible. To see if the new ones
incredible.
can at least do, you know, just make a repository that at least does that minimally, right?
Yeah. All right, I'll do it this or next week, and we'll do a little code review. It'll be a fun time.
It does sound good.
Anything else on the lines of code?
Guys, this was like I said, this was a chance to just get it off my chest. I just have to feel like, don't let it be a metric for how much stuff you're shipping at work, okay? Like, if you want to maintain the software and be able to use it again in the future, even if AIs get 100 times smarter, it's actually still good for them to spend less tokens. So if you're like, hey, I've spent a lot of money on vibe coding, well, other people's money. Shout out, thanks Cursor for the free credits. Anyways, I spent a lot of Cursor's money on credits in the last 2 weeks.
TJ's been telling me about his spending habits with Cursor.
They got me hooked. You guys got any more of them credits? It is actually, like, let's say you think we're gonna spend a bunch more, do more AI driven stuff, blah blah whatever. Like, okay, but then the baseline thing you're spending is tokens. So you actually want to make sure that you don't have an extra 100,000 lines of code in your code base that the AI has to read and process and figure out what they do and check all the places and spend tokens on that. It's like actually still bad, even if you're an AI maxi. So I don't understand. Yeah. Guys, don't do it. Just be on the lookout for that. Try and get some PRs that are red. Net removals. It feels good, too. You'll be happy at the end of the day. So I just had to get that off my chest, get it out in the stew. Thanks, guys.
No, you're actually shockingly right on that one. Even I don't know.
Shockingly?
I can't tell.
Wow.
Well, I can't tell if
you're meaning it or not,
but it's actually a great astute observer. Well, TJ, you know that sometimes you meme a little bit, but
yeah,
the
but
future side of it is really good, which is even if you get 10x the more context, a big code base is actually way worse. You will spend so much money. Like, you don't want big context, okay? I know.
Right,
like,
other
brothers get a lot.
The only people excited about that.
I'm not excited about it.
OpenAI loves big context and it cannot lie, okay?
Yeah.
But you, the guy footing the bill for OpenAI, you don't want big context. You want it to be small and more self-contained and obvious, and it works nice so that you don't have to spend 200,000 tokens
to get
to the first prompt.
You guys don't know anything. You don't understand vibe coding. None of that's true. You don't know what you're talking about. All you have to do is buy like 12 Mac Minis, guys. And then that's it. Then you have all the you just keep buying Mac Minis and plug them together.
Then it's basically free, no more payment.
Dude, it's all running on the Mac Minis.
Until you burn out both
USB power cables, and Gary Tan's got to go to the Best Buy to keep his tokens going.
I've got extras right here. I've got extras. I can tell right away
those are not rated for 5.1 intelligence or higher.
Those are some Kimmy K cords, man. Gross.
Those are some Kimmy K cords. Get those out of here.
I have this in my head. I'm imagining Gary Tan like at the Best Buy going like, do you guys have any like power cables that don't like burn out when you're running Claude code on your MacBook Pro?
I need the AI section. You guys have an AI section at Best Buy?
If I'm doing Suno and generating music, do I need this one?
Yes.
That one looks like it's great. That's some 5.3
And a vacuum
right
tube. A vacuum tube, Tej, if you really want that warm analog sound.
I don't have that. Sorry.
All right.
I don't even know what that means.
I was really hoping you were going to say something random that I might have around my desk, but that wasn't one of them.
You have so many cores. Where are they coming from?
Trash. I've got... Trash, unlike you, I don't have $10,000 of Pokemon cards right behind my desk. I have only other
it's
electronics.
Funny. I say that, and I looked over, and I have this.
Yeah.
And TJ's like, I don't have $10,000 of Pokemon cards, but I have a $10,000 marimba in my room.
It was not $10,000, but with inflation, maybe.
All right.
A long time ago.
Do we want to get to the main topic?
Yes, please.
Main topic 40 minutes in. Yeah.
All right.
30 seconds.
So, today on the stand-up, we are going to have Casey Muratori give us the lowdown on Notepad and Notepad++. If you are not familiar, there has been some big news in both of the old pads. And so, Casey, why don't you take the floor?
I mean, big news might be saying a little bit much. They both had security exploits is really what was kind of weird. And the reason normally we probably wouldn't be talking about it if it weren't for the fact that it's kind of just getting absurd now that, like, both of the Notepad apps for Windows both had security exploits in, like, the last 12 months, which is just kind of a little bit weird. And you're just like, how have we gotten to the place where, like, the text editor is regularly having security exploits? So I'll start with regular Notepad, which is just the one that comes bundled with Windows. That's the one that you're probably most likely to use because it comes directly from Microsoft and you don't have to have installed it. It's just going to be there, right? So this one's kind of nuts. And actually, I'm sort of glad that I read up on this one because I didn't actually know this fact about Windows. I maybe could have guessed it had I thought really hard, but I might not have because I might have been like, well, surely no one would do that.
You underestimate Microsoft, my friend.
And I was like, okay, I guess, yeah, lesson learned. So anyway, so what happens is in Notepad, in normal Notepad now, they've sort of started adding features, which is exactly what you don't want someone to do to a Notepad, right? Like the whole point of Notepad is it's just this like really crappy text editor. And you can kind of breathe a sigh of relief when you fire it up because it's just not going to do anything, right? So you kind of would have hoped that like, oh, if I'm going to open this file, nothing could possibly go wrong because it's Notepad. It doesn't have anything in it, can't do anything, it's fine. But they've been steadily adding features to Notepad, so now that's not true anymore. It's got Copilot integration and all this other stuff now.
That's what I need.
Yeah. So now if you open up Notepad, it's like anything goes. It's just like opening up Microsoft Word or something. Who knows how much security snafus could be hiding. So one of the things that they did is if you open a Markdown file in Notepad now, normally you'd think, well, it's just Notepad, so if I open a Markdown file, it's just going to show it as a text file. But no, it will actually do the Markdown parsing in Notepad, I guess. And now I have never noticed this myself. I've never used Notepad to open a Markdown, so I didn't even know it did that.
Same.
Apparently it does, right? And one of the things that it does when it parses the Markdown file is that it properly obeys that, like, parentheses bracket syntax for linking where you can basically put in like here's a URL of some kind and here's the display text that I want for it. It will actually do that conversion and properly display that in the Notepad so that you can kind of just click on links and they will, you know, it'll take you to the links. Now, here is where the problem begins. The way that they shipped this feature is like
Oh my god.
So
Casey, are you okay? Do we need a personal chat right now?
Yeah.
Here, Casey, I can make you feel a lot better. I actually do have a copy of the secure Notepad. It's right here. I got it right here. This is like super secure. I've got
Yeah, you couldn't fit secure on one line.
No mistakes.
No mistakes. Anyways, yeah, go ahead, Casey.
So the way that they shipped this feature. This will be lost on most of you, but anyone who's been like a longtime Windows programmer, they'll have the face that I just had on my face. They will have that on their face too. So the way that they shipped this feature was they do the Markdown parsing as you would expect, and they produce the like URL. They produce the like string, the display string, like you would in Markdown, and they take whatever the URL would have been, and they save just that raw string, basically. They just keep that. When the user clicks on the link, literally, they call shell execute EXW and just pass that string.
Oh, man. That can't be...
How's that even pass, like, is it like security audits when they like do this stuff?
That's... I don't believe it.
Yes.
And it's hidden, right? You can't see what it is because it's hidden. Underneath.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to tell you what it is. It's just going to pass it to shell execute. Just, that's it, right? So it's just like they fill out, you can actually go see, the people have decompiled the code. So they, you can actually go see, it's like, yep, it fills out the shell X, W like info struct. It sets the command to open and just blam, the string is just, there's the string. Like, have a party, open,
wow.
Right?
Wow.
So basically what this means is that anybody who, you know, was unaware, because, like, normally you wouldn't think that's what it would do. Like, normally you'd be like, oh, this is going to go to a web, like, this will go to a web browser, and right. the web browser will interpret the URL. So how risky could it possibly be? It's no right. different than if I was just yeah. clicking a link on a website, right? right. No. You can literally put anything you want in there, like file:// the path to something you want to run, and it will just run with your permissions on your machine right there. No web browser necessary, right?
I'm trying in my head to come up with a reason why that happened, and like I can't even come up with one.
Well, I'm trying to come up with how it was allowed to happen. That's the crazy part.
So that's just in there, right? And the only real saving grace here, so like that's really bad. Like that just should never, I mean, that's not, there's apologists who like replied to the tweet that I made about this who were like, well, I mean, the user clicked on the link. I'm like, no, I don't think you understand. The user clicked on the link is true for every security exploit that's ever occurred. Like, every security exploit, somebody at some point installed something, even if it's the operating system, and you can't be like, well, they installed an operating system on the computer, so it's their fault that eventually it got hacked. It's like,
no,
they
clicked
like,
accept on the terms and conditions, yes, so therefore...
if the user clicks on a link... It's the program's responsibility to ensure that it's going to just open the link in a web browser or something, not, oh, that could just be crap that runs on your machine
Can I ask a follow-up question?
That's not on the table, right? Yeah.
So shell execute, when it gets handed a URL that is a properly formatted HTTPS thing, will just launch a browser? That's kind of crazy. I guess I never really realized
that
you could just...
That's the protocol.
Shell execute.
I don't know shell execute. I've never tried this method. It just seems interesting to me that you can just be like, here's HTTPS. You know what to do. And it's just like,
So you could think of it as that is the job of open. So when you do shell execute, you can basically pass there these things called verbs, right?
Is XDG open the same?
Sorry.
Keep going. I'm just trying XDG to open.
Yes.
And the idea is, this is, you know, it makes sense. And when it was created, you know, shell execute, the first time I remember it was in Win95. So it's been around like a very long time. But
GX works in NeoVim Prime.
Yeah. So the idea behind shell execute is very simple. It's that protocol handlers, like people who know how to do something, they can register those with the shell, and the shell can go, oh, you know, someone called open and they gave me a PDF file. Who are the people who are currently registered to handle PDF files? Okay, let's open one of those and hand them this thing. So it literally, like, this is its job. Its job is to take something like a URL and decode it into saying, oh, that, I know how to open one of those. Here's a program on the machine that can do that for me. So shell execute is operating as intended. Now, obviously, this is a huge security hole, which is one of the reasons you generally don't want a program to just be calling shell execute on stuff if the user is unfamiliar with it. Typically, like, if you're going to call shell execute, you probably want to do a bunch of, like, hardening of that path to make sure that you've parsed the string yourself and know that it's not something confusing, right? Now, obviously, this has been a security exploit topic before because, and now we'll get to the really cool stuff. So prior to 2024, one of the things that shell execute did know how to handle was installer apps. So MSIs, shit that just runs and installs crap to your machine, right? So you could, with this exploit, you could do ms-app install: some remote file, and it will download and run it. Now, thankfully, in 2024, Microsoft just removed that feature.
2024?
2020, well, you know, better late than never, Teej.
Okay, yeah, that's like, okay.
Yeah, so
wow.
So now what will actually happen if you wanted to do the maximal version of this Notepad exploit is thankfully Microsoft's other, you know, people who removed that will stop that from happening. You'll get a box that pops up that says, hey, I can no longer auto-install things. Please notify whoever it was that distributed the software that they have to update their installation link. Like, yes, good. Very, very good job. That was good, right? And so that actually stopped this exploit from being potentially a lot worse than it was. Now,
question,
the other thing
one quick question. Can you just do like a curl you know, some, I don't know what they call DOS scripts. I'm just going to call Bash for, you know, some remote script and then pass it into Bash, whatever the equivalent of that. Can you just shell execute that? Can you just shell execute a curl?
As far as I know, and I guess I haven't thought about it too hard, but as far as I know, with a single click, meaning all you're going to do is click on one of those markdown parsed links, and it's going to pass something to shell execute. The thing that it's going to do has to be resident on your machine. So it would have to be like file :// something on your machine, and it would run that.
Okay.
But
okay.
It can't, because they closed that ms-app install. So a practical exploit for this exploit would have had to look like, hey, here's the GitHub for our document collection. No executables or anything, right? And you download it, but it does secretly have an executable in it, but you're never going to click on that because it's some buried in some subdirector you'll never see or whatever, right?
Yep.
Then the main page, which is like, hey, table of contents with a link, you click on that and it's got a file link to that executable and it runs it. And then you're done. You're toast, right? Because that's going to run that executable with your permissions right away. But without that MS app install, because that loophole is closed now for shell execute, I don't think there was a way to have one click both download and run a program. I could be wrong about that, though, but I don't think with a single shell execute it can do that. It had to be something already res. So it could either go get a file from the internet, like by opening a web browser with one click, or it could run a file already on your computer, but I don't think it can do both together. I don't think. People can correct me if I'm wrong about that, though, because, I mean, I'm not the person who reverse engineered this exploit, so I don't know. I'm just going by what security researchers put up there and making my best guess. But I did test it myself, though. I went and ran, made my own little shell execute thing to see what happens if I did an MSM app install, and I did verify that that is now blocked, at least on my, whatever my current version of Windows is that was running on this machine I'm talking to you via right now. It does, in fact, block those, so that's cool. Now, I don't think, unlike the exploit we're going to talk about next, I don't think this one was ever exploited in the wild because Microsoft found it. So they shipped it, and then some security audit or somebody who was going through the code or some research team that found it, send it to them, might have been what happened. I don't know. Because there were reverse engineerings of it online, so it might have been that one of those reverse engineering people actually were the people who reported it, right? I didn't look to see who was the, if there's somebody got a bug bounty for it or whatever.
My headcanon is it's that somebody was really mad that Microsoft is shipping updates to Notepad internally, and they're like, I'm going to show that you guys should stop updating this, because I know for sure that you guys, that's what I think in my head. I'm
very
thinking,
possible.
Some guy inside is like, stop updating this! I've been telling you we just need an editor!
Yep, the secure like someone on one of their harder core security teams was like, they did what to Notepad? All right, I'm going to go look at that. And it was like, what did you do?
Yeah, Joe and, from engineering's on that team. Yeah. I know he left a shell exploit in here somewhere.
Yeah. like the entire security audit is just like grep shell execute XW. And it's like, bam, 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 bam. They're like, oh, no. Yeah, so that was the one that shipped with Windows, and fortunately, again, as far as I'm aware, this was found by either security researchers inside or outside of Microsoft prior to anyone getting severely compromised by it, so it didn't end up being an issue, I don't think. That's my understanding, anyway. Not so for Notepad++, unfortunately. Notepad++, which I use, by the way, and have now uninstalled from my machines because I'm now terrified of even using a text editor anymore, which is terrifying. It's like,
I'm having a hard time emotionally thinking of whatever team's in charge of Notepad++, which hasn't changed from Windows 95 all the way up until just like 2 years ago. Whatever team that was in charge of it has started putting so many features into it, including AI. And I don't think they're ready for all the possible exploits. Like, I just don't think they're ready for it, and they don't know what they're doing out there.
No. Notepad++, on the other hand, this one is very scary. The Notepad one that I just said is more of like a facepalm kind of thing. It's like, guys, we don't need to add shell execute to, like, just don't put shell execute in Notepad ever. Like, it doesn't need that, right? So the problem is with Notepad++, this is a different story. Notepad++ is actually like a very sophisticated attack. attacking individuals. So that's why this one's so scary.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And by cool, I mean terrifying, but also cool story.
Okay. So, and I would preface that Notepad++ is like, it's, you know, it's a something developed by just some folks, right? Like, it's not a commercial package. It's really not their responsibility to secure it. So at some level, it's not that, you know, it's not like it's somebody's fault for doing a bad job, because it's like, well, they aren't even getting paid to do this thing, right? Like, so it's like they're not necessarily supposed to employ a security team or anything else, right? But it just goes to show you that, like, well, if you're just using some open source software, whatever it is, it's like, actually, you might just want to be really scared about that, because who the heck knows at this point? What happened with Notepad++ is as follows. They unfortunately made the decision, which I just wish people would just stop doing. They unfortunately made the decision quite some time ago to have the thing have an auto-update feature. Now, thankfully, it's not the kind of feature that's like, you know, Chrome or whatever, where it just silently updates the binary, like, if, you know, if you have the automatically keep updated checkbox checked or something, it just updates your binary whenever there's a new one or something like that. Thankfully, they did not do that. But what they did do is they made a thing called WinGUp or something like that, which they basically made their own little update program, their own little update sort of code base, and they actually share it. So you can use this, you know, this is something that other people could use as well. And it's just an updater that checks a website, gets an XML, a little XML like payload that says like what the latest, you know, download is, so that it can compare against itself. And if it's newer, it pops up a dialog box basically that says like, hey, there's a new version of, in this case, Notepad++ or whatever the WinGUp is running on. There's a new version. Would you like to download it now? Right. And you can click yes if you want it or no if you don't. Thankfully, because I hate software updates, for the past 4 years, I have always clicked no. Other people who probably were also advised that they should keep their software up to date for security reasons, which is always a mixed, like, the thing they don't tell you is the easiest way to get security exploits is to not update your software, and the easiest way to get security exploits is to update your software. So,
yep.
Right? So, like, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't, and this is a great example of that. So, probably going like, oh, I should make sure I'm up to date on my Notepad++, clicked yes. So this particular updater at the time didn't have any kind of cryptographic integrity check. So for those of you who maybe aren't familiar with this kind of process, when you are going to update a binary, typically what you want to do is you want to make sure that the binary that you're updating to actually is the binary that you think it is. So for example, if I install Notepad++ on my machine, in an ideal world, what would happen is I only have to trust the first time I got Notepad++. Now, obviously, if the first time I get Notepad++, it's a hacked version of it, I'm screwed. So maybe don't download the first version from the Pirate Bay or whatever, right? But once I have it installed, what I would like is for that program to have what we would traditionally call like a public key that, you know, every copy of Notepad++ just has the same key. When it wants to download a new version of itself, when it downloads that executable, it can check to see if that executable is signed in some way so that the binary itself actually matches, when you do a signature check, matches the public key that we have. And only the people who produce the binary have the private key, so no one else can do it without actually hacking, like, the, you know, extracting the private key from this, you know, wherever the build farm is. And that can happen too, at which case all bets are off. But at least now we know someone can't just, you know, hijack it. And the reason that this is important is because if you think about when something goes to auto-update, it's just connecting to the internet to get that update. If it's, you know, gets man in the middle, like somebody's sitting there and can intercept the traffic, it can just go, oh, he's trying to download a new Notepad++. I've got a great Notepad++ for him, and gives the modified executable that has all the security exploits in it, right? So anyway, this particular version of Notepad, I guess prior to 2025, they just didn't have any kind of verification. So they didn't verify the XML package, and they also that came to say, you know, where you should get the new version from, and they also didn't verify any executables that you would have downloaded as a consequence for that. So this was just an insecure process. And again, there's a standard CVE for this. If you actually go not CVE, there's a standard, what do they call it? I don't know if you've ever read, I'm not a security researcher, if you've ever read those CVEs, which are basically like the thing that details what the exploit was from the MITRE Corporation, keeps them in a giant list, right? There's part of the thing that details the exploit, there's like codes that they have for what kind of exploit it was. So they're like, this is just a standard kind. It's did not validate an update binary. That's just like a standard thing, right? Because this has happened before. So anyway, so that's the basic idea of what's about to happen. And so that part, while scary, because it's like, well, that's not great, the scarier part is how they went about exploiting this. Because a normal kind of exploit is a lot less scary than the kind that they carried out here. So what they chose to do, what the attackers chose to do with it, and they are believed to be state-sponsored because of the level of sophistication, is they decided, look, if we start randomly exploiting all of these, you know, this backdoor to Notepad, you know, that's going to get detected quickly. So instead, what we'll do is we'll pick high-value targets whose machines we were trying to compromise, and we will see if any, like, of those IP addresses connect to update Notepad++. We'll man-in-the-middle it, because we figured out how to hack the web, like we hacked the web provider or someone in between the web provider. I don't remember. The specifics are actually not as well documented as I would have. The specifics of the hack are very well documented. The specifics of exactly what the man in the middle part looked like were not. We man in the middle of that. We're just going to wait. We're going to pass everything through so it looks like Notepad++ is updating normally for everyone else. But when we see a high value IP comes in, then we'll slip them the Mickey, right? Then that and only that cup of Coke gets the roofie, right? So what they then do is they serve just the high-value targets an updated Notepad++ that has, and I loved this. It was, I don't know if hackers do these things to be funny, because, you know, I've never really known like a real black hat hacker, I guess, but I know some people who are kind of like maybe adjacent to that, and they do like inside jokes in that way. So I don't know. So what it does is it includes a legitimate copy of Bitdefender, of some executable from Bitdefender, a legitimate one that they have replaced some of the DLLs that it loads. So they use an executable that is signed, but that loads an external DLL so that they won't get security checked on that. And they replace just the DLL it loads with the DLL that does the security exploit that they need, right? So I'm like, okay. So they give you this package, and effectively what happens is Notepad++ will update itself with the bad version that you sent. Since it doesn't check, it just starts running that. You think you're running Notepad++, but actually you're running this copy of Bitdefender, which they've actually renamed to Bluetooth Service. So you're running a thing called Bluetooth Service. Which, yes. You're running this extra thing called Bluetooth Service that's actually a copy of Bitdefender that's intact. They haven't changed that at all, but they replaced some of the DLLs that it would have loaded with ones that have their exploit payload. And off we go. So this thing was like pretty hard to find, apparently. I'm not sure how the security researchers actually ended up doing it. You could see, you can go read Rapid7 has like their full breakdown of like how they went about finding it. And it's like they had to find it on just, there was a small number of machines that were having this happen, and they had to dig into it, I guess, because again, like very few people had it. So it's kind of like hair pulling of like, wait, what's going on? And eventually they were able to track it back to the fact that it was Notepad, even though most people's Notepad installs were not compromised, right? So at the end of the day, this is kind of terrifying, because it's like, holy cow. Like, I mean, I'm not a high-value target, so I guess I don't really have to worry too much about that kind of thing. But it's crazy just how intentional these things are. I didn't quite realize like how specific they might be. And my guess is we have not found most of these, right? Like this is not the only time they've done something like this, I'm sure. And what are the chances that we've actually detected most of them?
That's interesting that they're able to man in the middle so thoroughly like that. That's what I'm like most curious about is how could you, like, what kind of access do you need to have, or what have you hacked to be able to do that?
Just the web provider that happened to be running the little Wingy update other end or whatever it is, where the file, the web provider basically.
They were hosting the notepad.
They just had to hack the host. That's it. Yeah.
That's crazy. And then they would selectively pick which one is wild.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is like, yeah, like, I feel like that's what makes it so insidious is because normally, like, if somebody hacks a web host provider or hacks some website, a bunch of people will get screwed, but will know, like, that day, right? Because all hell breaks loose and, like, and security researchers are seeing weird files. Like, they're monitoring all this stuff, right?
Yeah.
Whereas this, they don't see anything.
Because they're not a high-value target.
Presumably they know, they try to figure out where all of those collection spaces are and intentionally would never serve it to one of those, right?
The hard part is finding someone high profile using Notepad.
Dang it, you took my joke, Trash. That's what I was going to ask. Is there such thing as a high value target using Notepad?
Yes. Sorry, buddy. I said it already. Sorry, Prime. I said it already. Sorry.
That's why I said, can I ask a question?
That's why I slipped it in there. I was like, I got to get this in before someone else says it.
Trash, that's
thanks.
Genius,
thanks.
Bro. That's
thanks
genius.
A lot. Thanks a lot. No, I really appreciate that. It makes me feel great about myself. I use it because I have to. I make the materials. I want people to be able to use a text editor that they're familiar with, that they can just get for free on Windows. Okay, you know, I'm not proud of it.
They're handing out Notepad Plus for free for sure now. They're like, guys, download this.
Casey, how does it make you feel?
Not great.
That when they attacked high value targets, you weren't included. Like, what went through your mind that day?
You know,
on the up and up, guys.
It's pretty.
We
good.
Don't know that they didn't try. Casey's been clicking no.
That's gonna say. I was just gonna say. I'm sure I was tops on the list, Prime. Okay. Tops on that list, and I just didn't hit up. They were probably furious that they couldn't get access to my machine with this hack. It's probably the whole reason they did it. And the other targets were just like to, you know, they're like, well, we could, since we didn't get Casey, we'll get a couple, you know, NORAD or whatever, you know.
There's like a cinematic scene that has Casey's face on a dartboard, a guy just smoking cigars, just throwing darts at Casey's face.
Yeah. And that's a chance why they kept the exploit open. They were just waiting for Casey to hit the update. They were going.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. We gotta get something back to the boss, even though we're really here to get Casey. They're like, all we got was Bill, and it was like, no big deal.
Bill from IT.
Yeah.
First,
no
this
gates.
Guy doesn't play Minesweeper ever, and now he doesn't update his Notepad. How are we going to hack this guy?
We've tried leaving USBs on the sidewalk. He doesn't put those in his computer. Yeah. We're screwed.
He's not even clicking markdown links in Notepad. He's some kind of freak.
What the hell? Everyone clicks markdown links. That's why they're there.
Especially in Notepad.
Specifically in the world's most markdown friendly editor that everyone knows about, Notepad.
Yeah.
Well, now that it has Copilot, I do kind of think it is the best place to work with markdown documents, Prime.
I do like the idea of someone at Microsoft coming out and going, well, we have some good news and bad news. The bad news is that the markdown parsing in Notepad was attacked with a pretty significant security exploit. The good news is, since nobody knew that Notepad parsed Markdown to begin with, no one was opening Markdown files in months, so we avoided any actual security situation.
We like to call that, here at the big kind of shops like we operate at Microsoft, we like to call that Swiss cheese security, and so we're really confident we've got so many layers of abstraction, nobody's going to be able to exploit our software.
Good All news, right. Copilot has had no security exploits because nobody uses it. And we will continue this. Nobody uses Copilot, so it can't get exploited.
Quick
strategy.
Question. Do we know what happened to Cortana? Where is she? Has anyone heard from her?
I actually feel bad that they killed Cortana.
Yeah.
And then they replaced it with Copilot. And I also feel bad that Copilot is the name of their office suite, the thing that's on your desktop, the thing that's inside of your Notepad, the thing that's on GitHub, and also the autocomplete. Like, it does make it a bit confusing that they could have, like, one of them could have just been Cortana. You know, Cortana for the boys.
I've got a question for you. If anyone internal to Microsoft can confirm this for us, before the next episode. I'd like to get a guess from everybody. How many people do you think at Microsoft are still actively working on Cortana? Because the answer is guaranteed to be more than zero. I know it's more than zero. So how many people do you think are still actively working on a Cortana-related team at Microsoft?
Well, so TJ, it's something. So something you may not understand, and honestly, it's I feel bad for you.
Okay.
In Halo Infinite, Cortana is like effectively killed. So they even
killed, they did it because of
they
did it for
nuts,
continuity and for lore.
Yeah, for
that's
lore
why they
purposes.
Killed Cortana, introduced Cortana.
Oh, I would hate to refer to the Halo timeline, but AIs actually have a finite amount of operating time before they actually go unstable.
You just literally called it Halo Infinite, and now you're saying it's finite. Yeah. I'm not following at all what's happening.
That lore kind of sounds like the real world.
Again, see now you're really showing your lack of Halo knowledge, because Infinite obviously refers to the USS Infinite, the major flagship ship that flies on Halo 5 and Halo 6.
They have a ship that's infinitely big? It's not
you may have played a little bit too much Halo.
I was just a big fan.
Okay. I'm just... Like, have you read, like, the Halo... Are there novels?
I have not read the books. I have not read the books, but
that's what he says.
I am not opposed to reading the books.
Okay.
Casey,
right.
he was DMing me about them last week. He was telling me how much he liked the novels.
That's a lie.
Prime, here's a, like, honestly, real talk here. Is it possible to have, like, a brief, you know, 5-minute segment on the stand-up in the future where you summarize the whatever chapter you just read from a Halo novel
every week?
I'm just finishing up that Hideous Strength probably this week, and so I could go into a Halo book. I'll go into Reach or something, and then I'll give you, like, this week on Halo.
Yeah, I would like to know, and this is sort of like our soap opera serialization version of the novel that we can...
Okay.
So we can all kind of be there with you.
I did all of Sanderson, effectively, so now I'm ready for the next set, and so...
Okay.
So I'm doing the one C.S. Lewis fiction book I haven't read, which is that Hideous Strength, and then I'll finish it all off.
All right. I'm ready. Looking forward to it.
Heck yeah.
All right, so which Halo book, though? There's, like, a lot of Halo books. I guess we
you
probably...
have to decide.
I have no idea.
I didn't even know there was a Halo book.
Trash, there's books for everything now? I don't know if you know that.
There's always, like, shovelware novel, like...
Trash, did you know there's a show to go with Pokemon cards?
What? You're kidding me.
Like, look at this. Just so you guys know, for Halo books, it does appear that there was at least... 5, or there's 6, 12, 18, 19 of them. It stopped in 2019. Ooh, the official, there's like an official book guide. Okay, we got a lot of books there. I got a lot of books to go through.
You don't have to read them all, just one.
You got to read them all.
No! What a brain rot.
I like it. One book.
That's a lot of reading. That'd be like a whole year's worth of reading of Halo books.
And I also read words out loud, unlike TJ. I respect the book, and I give voices to each individual. But TJ apparently
when
reads
you're by
without,
yourself.
Did you know that TJ reads without reading the word in his head?
What does that mean?
Pretty common. You don't have to say. You don't have to vocalize in your head.
Yes, you do. You need to, like, they all need to have voices and forms of speech. Like, you got to give the art of the book its due.
Yeah, man.
I'm telling you.
I don't know how to read without verbalizing it in my head.
I'm over there like, hey, TJ, I can't. Yeah. Rand's currently in Tanchico, and he's just like, I don't know what that is. I'm like, Tanchico. He's like,
No, that is not what happened.
I've never said that word in my lifetime. I don't know what you're saying.
You say it differently than me is what we said.
No, you say nothing. You've just never said it. That's what you said. You're like, I've never said that word. I spoke it with my mouth.
There's a difference. Quick question. Yeah.
Quick question. When you sing a song and it's a female, do you try to sing like a girl?
Of course.
Yeah, of course.
What do you mean? The pharyngeal, baby.
I just want to ask.
First off, Trash, boys and girls can both sing. We don't say that you have to sing like a girl. That's offensive in 2026. Yeah. They're also good singers, okay? Yeah. Well, you would think when they throw a baseball, too, or something, Trash? It's a little offensive, okay?
All right. I don't want to get canceled here. I'm just saying.
Against that, okay?
Trash is against girls. That's what I'm hearing.
This has taken the worst turn ever.
Boys and girls can both sing, okay, Trash?
All right, in this podcast, Josh, do not put that in here.
Trash, many people out there on the receipts app just added what you just did to their list of things that they did not like today.
Terrible.
No, I'm saying when we talked about it in the past, I don't know how you're going to say the words because they're made up words. So some of them, I don't know how you're saying them. We say them differently, but I don't sound out the words in my head as I'm reading.
Yeah. That's so you've never said them.
Yes. With my mouth.
Yeah, or your head. Like you're like, sometimes oh, I don't I do set them out of my you head. Or I set them. I've just never set them in my head or my mouth. And I'm like, yeah. So you've never set them. You're
yeah,
like,
but no, that I've wasn't a conversation we had for that before. You said it in a really goofy way that I didn't think anyone could possibly connect English letters together to make that sound
be,
from those
to be
things
fair,
on the page.
I misread Murdral so bad. I called it a Midreal. Like I was so far off. My dyslexia was
closed.
So thick. But it
case,
wasn't that one. It was
this?
A different one. It was a different yeah. one.
What book are we talking about?
Oh, that was Wheel of Time. That was Wheel of Time.
Wheel of Time. Okay.
Yeah.
Also read that one. I read the whole series out loud to my kids.
How long did that take?
Like, 2.5
as
years.
As long as I've known him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like you've been talking about Wheel of Time since I've like discovered Prime.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. That was my fault too. Sorry, Prime.
Yeah, that was a good book. We're very happy. My son, in fact, liked it so much he wants to re-go through it, though he
is
very angry at the end.
No spoilers for Trash. He's just about to start. It's only like 15,000 pages, Trash. You got this.
Okay.
It's quick. It's easy.
My AI will read it
in half year if you really put your mind to it.
That's true. I used to read the books like in a weekend when they came out. So you could get them done
but
fast,
that's because he doesn't say any of the words in his head. So he's omni-reading.
I'm not omni-reading. That's Vegan. He doesn't read anything. Omni-reading is a made-up word that he made up to explain why you can send him a text and nothing comes out the other side.
Right. But, so is this one of those things where like we see a new government report that's like, unfortunately, up to 37% of all high school graduates are now omni-reading.
Omni-reading. Like, yeah. Like, right, a coin termed by a recent influencer Beganbot for the reason why
we don't have an illiteracy problem. Just to be clear, what we have is an omni-reading problem. They're very different.
They're reading everything at once or not at all, and so it's kind of like they're really good at reading. We did such a good job that they can read everything / nothing.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for joining us on this week of The Stand-Up. With me, as always, is Teej DV, Trash Dev, and Casey Muratori. If you want to find out more, go on Twitter and follow C. Muratori. Follow Trash with 2 H's or Teej DV, TEEJ_DV. Thank
or the stand-up pod, wherever
or the stand-up
you are.
Pod.
Instagram.
And
probably
by the way,
TikTok. Nobody knows. Instagram, X.com, stand-up, thestanduppod.com. All over the place. Yeah. I've got links now for Casey because I made the site.
Yep. Also, super cool stuff that's happening over on Spotify. And I was just thinking that, you know, you keep telling me about how these hackers are state-sponsored. We're always looking for new sponsors for the podcast. So if states also
so
do sponsorships for
there,
podcasts,
I was going
to
ask, like, Florida, Georgia, California, who was putting it
sponsor?
On?
Yeah, which one?
Yeah.
I want to know.
Yeah, South Dakota, if you want a state sponsorship, I got
podcast
one
podcast of South Dakota, a state sponsorship, the official podcast of South Dakota.
The official. All right.
Bye.
The end. I didn't know that joke was going to land or not. Some people was like, that's not funny. That's not funny.
Errors on my screen. Terminal coffee and hair.